Today on the 21st Show, the race for governor. Ted Dabrowski is a former banker turned conservative policy advocate. He's one of four men seeking the Republican nomination to challenge Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker. We'll talk with him about politics and policy, and we want to hear from you. Our phone lines are open throughout the hour at 800-222-9455. What do you want to hear from a Republican candidate for governor? 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, it's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the past several months, we've been interviewing candidates in the Democratic and Republican primaries for United States Senate, one of the top statewide races in Illinois this year. And in the coming weeks, we're also working to interview candidates for the other top-of-the-ticket race this year, governor. On the Democratic side, incumbent J.B. Pritzker is unopposed as he seeks a third term. A recent Emerson College poll had him with a 51% approval rating, 42% disapprove. Four people are running in the Republican primary to challenge him. Former State Senator Darren Bailey, who won the party's nomination 4 years ago but then lost to Pritzker by 13 points. DuPage County Sheriff Jim Mendrick. Rick Heidner, a real estate developer and operator of video gambling terminals. And my guest today, Ted Dabrowski. Dabrowski was born to parents who immigrated to Chicago from Poland and Ecuador. He earned a bachelor's degree in industrial management from the Georgia Institute of Technology and an MBA in international finance from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Dabrowski's first act in life was in banking. He was a managing director at Citi, spending a significant amount of that time in Poland. Later in life, he went back to school, earning another master's degree, this time in public policy from the University of Chicago. In his second act, Dabrowski has been best known for his roles in two conservative organizations in Illinois. He was vice president of policy at the Illinois Policy Institute and then became president of WirePoints, a website that focuses on the state's economy and government. Dabrowski joins me now for the hour. Ted Dabrowski, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me on, Brian. I appreciate it and look forward to talking about the campaign and the great state of Illinois.
Absolutely. Listeners, as usual, we have a lot to get to. We want to also open the phone lines to you today. You can join us at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. So let's begin just by talking about your background. What? Tell me about your upbringing, child of two immigrants. What was that like?
Well, it's pretty fascinating. Very different parents. Father who escaped from communist Poland. Very, very Eastern European. Hated communism, loved this country, and just was so passionate about freedom, and protecting that freedom. And my mom, totally different from a Latina woman. Of course, very sweet, very passionate. Just two amazing parents. Just very different. But I'd say the key was that they both came here for freedom and opportunity, and so they knew that assimilation into America was key. Learning English and just being great English speakers was key, and education was the dominant thing. My parents wanted us, my brother and my sister and I, to be educated. So they stressed that was our way out as an immigrant family. That was our way up and out of. Or out into the world, and so we did that. But I tell you, the passion that my father taught me to protect freedoms, and I guess just the loving person my mom is taught me the softer side of life. And they both became American citizens. They both came legally, which is a key. They both were legal immigrants and became U.S. citizens. So I learned so much from them, and they are a huge part of why I love Chicago and why I love Illinois.
I understand you spent part of your youth or childhood in Ecuador as well as Illinois. I wonder what you learned from that time abroad.
Well, I was young. I was from 3 years old to 6 years old, but then I went back often. And Ecuador is a beautiful, beautiful country. But you also learn a lot about the dysfunction of government and poorly run countries. You see all the poverty, and if you go back whatever 50 years, I just the poverty level is phenomenal. And so again, it's another thing to appreciate this country and everything it offers. But they're amazing places. But again, the U.S. and its free markets and its ability to create opportunity for people, there's nothing that compares with it.
So I mentioned you got a bachelor's degree in Georgia. You worked in New York City, Poland, Mexico. What brings you back to Illinois and has kept you here?
Oh, well, I mean, that was it. When I had a great career overseas. I was in Citibank, Mexico for 6 years and loved working there to help that that economy globalize and, tied in and, so they would have more growth and opportunity in Mexico. And then I got a call to go to Citibank, Poland, where I worked for 9 years. And that was the amazing experience because that's where, I got to understand who my dad was and why he was so passionate about America. I got there in 1998. That was about 9 years after the Berlin Wall came down. And it was amazing to work with so many people passionate to return their country back, catch up with the West, bring back, capital markets, individual freedom, just economic freedom. And so I did that. But after doing that for 16 years, I did want to bring my kids back to grow up as Americans. And my gosh, there was only one place that I could think that I would ever come back to, even though I got to see all parts of the world, and that was Chicago. This is, the Chicago area. This is where you have the Latinos, you have the Poles, you have a, international city, an amazing economic engine of Chicago, but also just the lure of Illinois and what it meant for my family. And that's where we started. So this is where I came back, and it's been great.
Why did you leave the world of banking for the lucrative world of policy work? Ha ha ha.
But I loved, I mean, banking was fine. What I loved was helping economies grow. It's fun to take places that are in trouble and work with, and in particular in Poland, work with leaders who want to just lift their people out of, in the case of Poland, yeah, it was a very poor country, very educated, but very poor after communism. And so, right, to just to bring back those policies and it was just amazing. Sorry, and I forgot your question though.
But why did you leave banking? It seems like
Oh,
a, I
right.
mean, you know, it's certainly probably a more comfortable, I'm sure the Policy Institute paid well, but you know,
Well,
it,
not that
probably not
well.
as much
Certainly,
as Citi.
no. No, so listen, I loved finance, but so two things. One, I wanted to come back to America. This is, I remember a dinner discussion at Citibank in Poland, and there's an Italian big fiat guy, and we're talking, and you try to avoid politics and a lot of business, but the conversation turned to politics, and it was something about America. I don't remember the whole discussion, but this guy, his face turned so red, and I saw a hatred in America or a hatred in American policy, and I was like, wow, and it was true. There's a lot of things going the wrong way in America.
This would have been during the Iraq War, probably a
Yeah,
lot of
right.
Polish.
Yeah, because early 2003, 2004. So a lot of anger. Here I am helping Mexico. I'm helping Poland. I started to say, I really want to help my country, and I didn't know how. Right. Here I was doing pure business. I wasn't political at all. I had no idea about politics, but I did know a lot about geopolitics, of course, and in banking, you keep up with. You have to know what's happening in the world. I worked in financial markets, the currencies, the bonds. So I knew a lot. But I didn't know anything about like local politics, state politics. But I knew I wanted to come back. So I finally said, I'm going to give up that life and I'm going to go get engaged in public policy. And I said, I don't know how, but I quit right before. It was perfect timing too. I was lucky. I quit right before that financial meltdown in 2007. And I went back and I got a public policy degree at University of Chicago. I said, let me start over. Let's create a, like you said, part two or whatever it was. And I had a backpack on with a bunch of young people at Chicago, and I started saying learning about Illinois, and it's like, wow, what happened to that great state that my parents came to? I had no idea how bad things had gotten in Illinois, so that became my passion to turn around this state.
So it's one thing to stand on the outside from the think tank world or even journalism, frankly, and offer suggestions. Why do you want to be governor? Why do you want to be the man himself?
Well, you know, so I started doing this work, and as I mentioned, I wasn't aware of just how bad things were. And you know, I went to the Illinois Policy Institute. I didn't know state think tanks existed when I was at when I went to University of Chicago, but I found it, and started writing about it. And I found that when, you know, a finance guy and a data guy, I love to expose the facts and the truth. And I started writing about it, and I got a lot of pushback. And it was right after the big tax hike in 2011, this quote temporary tax hike. And I started showing how job creation started to go down after that tax hike, and people attacked me for it. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I'm just showing the data and what it says, and people didn't like the narrative that I put. And you know, I was worried that we're going to make ourselves non-competitive. You know, I started doing that. And so I've been doing it for the last 15 years, exposing how our kids can't read. It drives me crazy that I can't get more political people to be passionate about literacy and fixing our failed schools and you know, the taxes and all that. So I did all that for a long time, 15 years. And I've worked with grassroots groups. I've traveled the state with legislators. I've testified. And I finally said, all right, I can keep writing about it. I can keep reporting it. Or given what I've done, given my inspiration of what I saw happen in Poland, where we took a country that had been destroyed and now it's one of the most prosperous countries in the world, certainly in terms of growth rate. Let me take my chance at leading it. If nobody else wants to lead, I'll do it, because I think I know where the bodies are buried and I know what the solutions are. So I jumped in and here I am.
Let's talk. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Ted Dabrowski, one of the Republicans seeking that party's nomination for governor of Illinois. The election is coming up in mid-March, although early voting, of course, opens up next month, depending on where you are in Illinois, different times. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. So a lot of policy we can talk about. Let's start with taxes. You mentioned that. I presume that, like most, I don't presume, I know from reading you for many years now, that you think state taxes are too high. What do you do about that as governor?
Yeah, let me just start by saying one thing that I don't think I've said yet, that I'm just on the record saying, my gosh, we should be a top five state in this country. We should be one of the most dynamic, fastest growing, you know, high wage growth.
I'm saying, what metric? Because we are the fifth largest economy, sixth most populous
correct.
State. So in what metric are you saying that
so,
we're
so
falling
in,
down?
In job creation. So for example, I'll go straight to it. Like under Governor Pritzker, just in the 7 years he's been in office, we are the fourth worst in economic growth in the country. So you line up all the 50 states, we're at the very, very bottom. When you look at job growth, we are fifth worst. When you look at wage growth, we're sixth worst. So we're not creating the prosperity that we need. And that's why people are leaving. That's why, you know, think about it. You know, when you chase away a Caterpillar headquarters and a Boeing headquarters and a Citadel headquarters and Tyson Foods and Morton Salt, you're doing something really, really, really wrong. And, you know, it doesn't matter how you measure it. It's a fact. And so we should be a top five state, and we should be competing with North Carolina, with Tennessee, with Florida, with Texas, and we're not. And so I say that because we should be there. So, you know, one of the things you have to look at, and you brought it up just now, are taxes. Highest property taxes in the country, highest sell taxes in the country. We now have the highest sales tax in Chicago in the country. We have the second highest gas taxes in the country, and people don't feel like they're getting their value for it. Maybe if we had the best government in the country and highest growth, maybe people would put up with it, but they're not. And so when you take all those taxes, and there's different cuts at it, we're one of the highest tax in the country, and yet we're still losing population, we're still losing companies. So we have to bring that down, and we have to obsess about it, because
you well know how complicated this system is, and it's an interweaving series of local taxes,
absolutely,
state taxes. So let's try and disentangle that a little bit. And I should
sure.
say we will need to take a break in about 3 minutes here, so I'm going to hold you
sure.
have to hold you to that. But let's start with the state income tax. What would be the optimal state income tax rate under a Governor Dabrowski?
Well, you know, I think we should try to get back to that 3% that we had before we did the tax hike. We were operating fine with that then. We should be operating with that now. You know, Missouri just announced that they're trying to go to zero income tax. They want to go to zero. You've got Kentucky and Indiana that went to flat rates just a few years ago, and now they're lower than our rates by far. they're in that Indiana's below 3% now. We're not competing anymore. The only one that has like a high rate is Wisconsin. So our neighbors are beating us on lower income tax rates. So if we want businesses to come here, we got to make it competitive for them. I would love in one day in the future to go to zero income tax rate. I always felt like, why do we tax labor? Labor is the last thing you want to tax. Move more towards the consumption like other states have done. But I think we just need to be more competitive for our big businesses.
What do you
The
cut? What's your...
job creators, not just big businesses, sorry, the job creators.
Yeah, what do you cut to get to a 0% income tax rate in Illinois?
Well, of course, there's many things. I think we have to change our culture, but you can start with let's start with quite a few things. One is we have the most units of local government in the country, the most by far, and you can imagine when you have too many units of government, you've got more bureaucracies, more bureaucrats. That means and we have very high paying salaries for many of the positions we have at superintendents or just across the board government positions. And of course, that means big pensions. So, right, we have the biggest pension debts in the country because we have the most units of government, because we have some of the highest benefits. All those things pile up, and they turn into high income taxes. I could talk about the massive administrative growth in our universities. Same thing in K through 12. Massive growth in that. Even as we shrink our school population, our higher ed population, students. We're spending more and more. So I could go on and on because we have many things that we do. We still
Well,
do
we will
pension.
let me ask you to pause there because
Sure,
we will go
sure.
on and on, but after a short break, which we need to take now, we're talking with Ted Dabrowski. He's one of the Republicans seeking that party's nomination for governor here in Illinois. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. You can find other conversations in our series of interviews with candidates for the top offices in Illinois on our website, 21stshow.org. More to come after a break. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today with Ted Dabrowski, who is the candidate, I should say, one of the four men seeking the Republican Party nomination for governor in Illinois to challenge incumbent Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker, who is running unopposed for a third term this year. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our program, 800-222-9455. We'll get to some calls a little later in the hour. I feel like I need to do some disclosures here before we get into the continued policy discussion, which is one, our home station, Illinois Public Media, is part of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And because of that, by virtue of my employment, I am a member of the state university retirement system. My wife also happens to be as well. She works for a different state university. So there's that. Listeners can take that with a grain of salt as we get into talk about pensions and expenses for state government. Not a grain of salt. You know what I mean? Take that into consideration as you will. So Ted, one of the things I know that you are we've talked about income taxes and how that relates to property taxes and pensions, and obviously that is a huge cost driver. Pension costs have crowded out other spending in state government, dealing with this decades of unfunded liability that has built up in the system, the worst funded government pension systems in the country, 100%. The question I have is, with all these things, is how you get 60 votes for that in the General Assembly, in the House, and 30 votes for that in the Senate, with likely Democratic supermajorities continuing in the Illinois General Assembly. How are you going to approach governing in a way that won't be a repeat of what Governor Bruce Rauner, who I suspect, I know, shared a lot of your goals and perspectives on state government and utterly failed to enact huge parts of his agenda that dealt with or aimed to deal with these issues?
Yeah, I think the difference is, Rauner was a full outsider. I'm not sure that he understood the issues fully. I thought he ran a good campaign, but once he got into office, he struggled to execute, let's call it. And I think the difference between me and Rauner, I think, will be is that Rauner thought that he could outmaneuver Madigan, he could outsmart the public unions, and it just didn't work, and it just turned into chaos. The difference for me is that I know these things, I know these issues, I can make them very transparent. I'll make them very transparent, whether it's all the different issues that we've talked about, taxes or these pensions or where we stand in the country, and make them transparent and use that not just with the public, because the public deserves to know the truth. The public doesn't hear the things that I say. The ones that follow wire points, for example, or who follow Illinois Policy Institute, see it, but most people don't, and the media hasn't been helpful. So one is making it very transparent to the people. If you want change, if you want lower property taxes or you want lower gas taxes, then you have to work with our administration and the Democrats who are fully in charge. We have to persuade them to lower things and change things. And so a lot of that will be a lot of negotiation, a lot of transparency. And I think, I do believe, I want to take the issue of like school choice, for example. The number of kids who are reading at grade level has just collapsed in this state. And I've talked about Decatur and Peoria and Rockford and a lot of cities, inner cities, where the reading percentage, the kids that are reading at grade level is like in the single digits or maybe teens, has to change. I think we can find partners in the Black Caucus, in the Latino Caucus, amongst the Democrats. We have to fix that. We can't have our kids unable to be literate. And so we're going to work together. I'm going to show the facts. We're going to have to persuade, maybe some pressure, obviously, right? And obviously some public pressure, because I think the community should know that their kids aren't learning anymore and that they should demand change, reforms, school choice. It's just going to be a long, long campaign. It's 4 years of campaigning and 4 years of negotiating and maybe 4 years of battle, but it has to be done well and it has to be done smartly.
What is different? Why does this not end in tears and 2 years of stalemate as it did with Rauner? Because I mean,
Because Rauner didn't go to the people. Rauner did not go. He did not persuade the people to join him. And we're seeing. I mean, we're going to put out something today. And the last 7 years, we're losing so many people to other states. And this is again part of the public persuasion. If you want change, then you have to put pressure on who's in charge. Look, we have the highest property taxes in the country. Who are the supermajorities? Democrats. They are the ones that have to deliver the change. I will be the agent of change as governor, but they have to deliver it. If you want kids reading, they have to deliver it. And if they don't deliver, then you the public need to kick them out if that's what you want. And I think that's a conversation we didn't have. And Rauner didn't have that conversation. He did in the campaign, but not when he was governor. And that was his big failure, I think. But that's it. If you don't want to pay the second highest gas taxes, then you have to ask the legislature to change that. And this is part of this what you call campaigning leadership. We haven't had that leadership. Pritzker doesn't ask to lower property taxes. Pritzker is the one that doubled the motor fuel tax, which led to the second highest gas taxes in the country. He's leading the problem. And so we have to change that. We have to do the opposite of what Pritzker's doing.
I love talking about the state budget. I love delving into policy. I'm subscribed to COGFA's email lists. I read Wire Point. I read all this stuff. Most people want to talk about abortion or ICE or trans kids on their kids, high school sports team. I think part of the issue you're going to run into here potentially is trying to get the voters engaged in this stuff. You acknowledged it yourself, right? They're not. Why do you think, what magic sauce do you have that changes that?
Well, I think I'm different. I'm from the outside. I am data centric. I do like to present people with the facts. I don't present them with hyperbole. I think people want the same thing. Here's what I find. I found that I was, in Southern Illinois. I spent one of the many trips I've made down there. I spent a whole week down there, and the biggest issue that people complained about was taxes. I mean, by far, when I'm in Central Illinois, the biggest issue. Taxes and property taxes to the driver. And then just whatever was it, a month ago on the west side of Chicago, the people in the Black community burning their property tax bills because they doubled. I think there's enough people out there looking for something. They're looking for leadership, and we haven't had it on our side in the way that we should. Again, Rauner ran a good campaign, but he didn't as the executive, he just didn't keep running that campaign. So I think that's the difference. We just have to keep making our case. We can't think it's just going to happen. It's hard work. It's a campaign, and it's a 4-year campaign once I'm in office.
So part of your job now in the primary election is convincing Republican voters that you are the best person to take it to J.B. Pritzker in the fall. Mm-hmm.